Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's the Empowerment Network. Once again, it's 365 days of motivation, personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rome, coming to you live once again. We got an excellent show for you today, developing ourselves, the things we should teach our children, and much, much more. Let's get it started. Come on with me now. Oh, yeah. That's right. And you know what to say next. Hey, there is no better love, no better love than for self and kind. Happy New Year and welcome to Empowerment Saturday 2021. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. Once again, I'm your main man, Marvin Rohn, my co-host Stan Macklin, and a crew of conscious people that have a dialogue and discussion about what needs to happen in our community in order to manifest change. And today we're going to talk about developing ourselves. But first, let's get into the tenets of the NAAEA. The National African American Empowerment Association is an association formed to do five critical things and more. One is create a political agenda. You have to have a political agenda in this country. You have to have a strong, sound economic platform and agenda in this country. A, you have to have an athletic agenda. What is athletics, Marvin? You say it's health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. We have to take care of our bodies. We are sick, right? That's the truth. Many of us are on medications. We got to get off. You know how? Diet, rest, exercise, and water, and a tremendous health program, not only physically, but mentally and emotionally. You have to protect your mental and emotional health. That's right. I said it. And culture, right? We need to look at relevant cultural programs for our children, right? And that we teach them, like we just came through Kwanzaa, right? You don't have to do all the ritual, but the principles, right? Instill the principles in your life and in our community and in our children and in our people, and we can't go wrong. And lastly, education. And that education goes on. It's an ongoing process from the day that you're born until the day that you transition out of here. Why not educate our children and our community to be the best that they can be? That's what I'm talking about. It's about personal empowerment, and it's about you, and it's about all of us, 365 days of the year. Now, I do want to say we had a wonderful, wonderful Kwanzaa celebration on yesterday. That's right. It was New Year's Day, so we had our NAAEA Kwanzaa celebration. I would like to thank my co-host, Dan Macklin, for co-hosting with me, along with Brother George, who did a great segment. Brother Booker came through. We had sisters Benita and Danny with wonderful presentations, and the sister was singing like an angel. And then we had Brother Afi pour in his reasons why we should have a Emancipation Day. And then Brother Akebulan cleaned it up really nicely. And then Sister Yolanda cleaned it up with helping me get all the background work straight. So thank you all. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I could not do it without you. So we say thank you. All right, so next we're going to transition down to my brother, Brother George, for the Willie Lynch segment. Brother George.
Yes, sir.
Are you there? Hey, brother, how you doing?
Yes. I'm doing good. I really, really enjoyed myself yesterday on the program. I enjoyed all the contributions that were made and the knowledge that was given about Kwanzaa. And, you know, I think that it's headed somewhere. And I really, really felt good about it. You know, I slept well last night.
Mm-hmm. And, again, thank you, brother. Great presentation. He had it laid out. We will have the video. And you guys will get it first, but then we'll post it on the website for anybody who want to go back and see it. Great, great job. Excellent presentation, right? So we know what Kwanzaa is about. And we're going to apply those principles of Kwanzaa throughout the year. So, Brother George, I'm turning it over to you for our segment. You ready?
Yes, sir.
Take it away.
Well, today I'm taking a, you know, a quote out of a very dear and very near and dear friend to us, Dr. Ishaka Musa Barashango. He wrote a number of books, and this is one that I think is most well known: African People and European Holidays, A Mental Genocide. And I, once again, whenever I'm talking about Willie Lynch, I'm talking about anything that's like a misleading lie that's been told to us, that we just accept information when it comes from the sources of the overall culture, most well, European culture, and we just listen to that and we take it all as being true. And we're going to have to reevaluate a lot of what it is that we learn from them. Europeans have always had a double standard as to what constituted a theft. History has shown us that wherever Europeans came into contact with people of color, they had no scruples about taking their land, their resources, or their body and soul of the indigenous inhabitants themselves. These demon-like intruders, through their land-grabbing, thievery, and inhuman barbarity, have been responsible for the destruction of some of the most beautiful and enlightened civilizations the world has ever known. African people would be wise to give careful consideration to words of Dr. Chancellor Williams, as quoted from his book, The Destruction of Black Civilization. The necessary re-education of blacks and a possible solution of racial crisis can begin, strangely enough, only when blacks fully realize this central fact in their lives: the white man is their bitter enemy. This is not the ranting of a wild-eyed militancy, but the calm and unmistakable verdict of several thousand years of documented history. Now, that was a quote from Dr. Chancellor Williams. And essentially, you know, he was saying that in order to determine a person's psychology, you do it through knowing what their history is. You can't let a person tell you what they're like. You have to read what they have done. And so once you've read what they've done, then you can make a better judgment. And I got that analogy from Dr. Amos Wilson. There's so many of our great scholars that have laid a pathway that all we have to do is get on it, that all the information is to get us back on the right path and back into our Moorish scientific minds to do so, you know. And I appreciate, you know, Marvin giving me this segment each Saturday, and that's my Willie Lynch segment for this week.
Thank you, brother. Now, that was powerful, right? Because a lot of us don't want to think about it being that way. I think we call that cognitive dissonance, if I'm not mistaken. I think we don't want to realize, if we look at the history of not all. So let me be clear for those who, you know, want to put it that way, frame it. Not all white people are bad, but for the most part, historically, they have a horrible track record. Sorry, it's true. Read The Destruction of Black Civilization for yourself and other books. Brother George, you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Yeah, Chancellor Williams, and it's one more book. I can't think of it right now. But anyway,
John
it's the
G.
Green
Jackson
Book.
Introduction.
Yeah. To African Civilization.
John G. Jackson, Introduction to African Civilization.
Right.
It's,
right.
It's a
thank
lot
you, brother.
More that have like introductory type information, because you can't go straight to reading certain books because they're too complex. They have too much information in it that you need a foundation where you started from, and then you can understand what they're talking about. But, I mean, it's a lot of research that's been done, but Transton Williams' book, An Introduction to African Civilization, is another great book.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. And that is, folks, your Willie Lynch moment. Thanks, Brother George. Okay, so we have to understand that when you understand that there are scholars that have done the work and done the research, and Brother George in our community conversations laid it out really well. We have people who have mastered the work, that have done the work of educating us on our ancient past, and that should be the foundation for moving us forward. Now, I want to transition quickly before we go to the next segment. I promised that we would do something on Kwanzaa for every month in this new year. And so today we're going to emphasize unity, the Kwanzaa principle of unity, umoja, right? And that is to strive for and maintain unity in the family, community, nation, and race. I'm going to say it one more time. And think about that. If you're striving for unity in and maintaining it in your family, in your community, in your nation, and in your race, you cannot be divided. We have to work to stay together, people, right? We got to work together. This nation, unfortunately, was founded on the mere genocide of one race and the complete enslavement of another. And we're moving out of that phase now. It's our time, people. It's our time. So I'm going to go now to our clip, and then we're going to the lines. I want to hear from you today. All right, so today we're talking about
I ain't no perfect man. I'm trying to do the best that I can with what
we're talking about. We're talking about developing ourselves and the things that we need or we should teach our children. So take a listen.
One of the very first things we must teach our young people is self-love. Now, a lot of people walk around and say they love themselves, but they are lying. That is a defense mechanism. A lot of people who do a lot of proclamations and say how bad they are, how they got it all together, the opposite is actually true. They are what we call posturing. They're overcompensating for actually what is a deep-seated insecurity. Self-love is not external, it's internal. And how do we teach our young people to love themselves? Well, we should teach them their history. We should teach them about ancient Africa. We should teach them some of the history of the diaspora in Haiti and Brazil and Jamaica and different places on the globe where our people constitute a large population and have a very esteemed and regal history of accomplishment, ingenuity, and intelligence. You should try to identify what it is your child is most interested in terms of professionally. They enter architecture, medicine, inventions, farming, politics, and you should find black people in history that served in those positions honorably and powerfully, and you should expose them to those people to let them know that they come from a lineage that is rich and royal and majestic. That is one of the first things you do. You should also get them involved in activities and closely observe those activities in which they do well. You should notice their personality traits and put them in situations where those personality traits that are honorable and noble will shine and will grow. And as children get a taste of victory and triumph, success, positive feedback, their confidence naturally grows, and therefore the love they have for themselves will be intrinsic and lasting, and they will own it. They won't love themselves because somebody else told them they're pretty, somebody else told them they're this or that. They will appreciate it for themselves, and it will be true, earned, deserved, and actual, and that's what we want to do. Children who genuinely love themselves who generally grow up to be adults, who love themselves, who are secure, who are confident, who feel competent, and will take calculated risks. They're people who will live their lives more fully. They're people who will be more reliable, more trustworthy. And this is what we want to do for our children. We cannot have children out in this world who are have this void because they don't love themselves. And therefore they hurt others. They're malicious. They're overly competitive and jealous. We have too much of that in the community already. I'm sure you'd agree. And so one way to combat that is to teach our children early to love themselves and make that love be genuine and make that love be internalized.
All right. You heard it. We have some things that we need to do in terms of not only teaching our children, but many of our adults need these tools, right? Self-love, right? An understanding of your history, right? Understanding what your interests are as well as your child's interests, right? Understanding the traits, right, of and qualities of an excellent leader or an example or even a good quality mentor. And then having those youth or even yourself to walk this earth with confidence, right, and competence. And once you assure yourself, guess what? There's nothing that you can't do. I'm going to the lines. You ready? You better be ready. My co-host Stan Macklin is not in today, and we're wishing him. He's kind of under the weather, so let's wish him well. But I'm going to the lines, and I'm starting at 7974. 7974, you at the top of the deck. It's Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin. It's Empowerment Saturday. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey, so I agree with the clip that you played. I do think that we need to think about what our purpose is for our children. I think that can help provide a roadmap for our youth. And I think the self-love piece is critically important because, again, there's so many spaces in the world that are going to have counter messages for our children that we have to provide a foundational safe space for our children to let them know and instill in them who they are before the world tries to tell them and shape who they are. I think that the Kwanzaa principles are key to providing a roadmap for our children. I don't believe that we really need to recreate the wheel here. I think when you look at the Kwanzaa principles, you know, Nia, we're talking about purpose. I think all of the Kwanzaa principles really provide a roadmap. It doesn't mean that everyone has to do everything the same way, but that's what a map is. It gives you a guide. It doesn't mean you have to take the same route. Just like when you put something in Google, it may give you three different ways to do something, right? So I think that it provides us a good foundation. And I think that with our children, similar to, you know, I've been working and have worked in higher education for a really long time, and the sort of roadmap they give students is that you come in and you take your general education courses, right? And then you move on to your major and more specific courses, typically in your last 2 years. I think we need to provide our children with the foundation. And as they grow into their purpose and they grow into what they need, then we provide them with more critical courses that are more specific to what they want to do and how they get there. But that foundation, I really feel, is all of those Kwanzaa principles can serve as a foundation and then help guide them to where they need to go. I think that everyone has a different purpose, but all of our purposes in our community, and particularly in our Black community, can help fill all of the voids that are represented for us, all of the problems, the trauma, the oppression. I think that collective purpose that we have with our individual purposes can help fill those gaps and those voids and create solutions to many of the problems that we have. I think, you know, when you couple our history as a guide for the future, it's just really important that we think about where we're going. And if we don't think about where we're going, even if some of those destinations are not the same, but in general, what are we trying to accomplish? Particularly, our children are the ones that are going to get us there, right? We have limited time on this earth. So as we think about passing down our legacies, it would be reckless of us not to prepare our children for what they're going to face in the future. And if we're thinking about our legacy, and passing that information and that knowledge down to build that foundation and that strength, the more foundation that you have, the stronger your foundation is, it's going to be harder to move or shake you. And so I think that is just really important when we're thinking about raising our children from an individual perspective with self-love and purpose, but providing a really strong foundation.
I like that. I like that. Thank you. And I'm coming back to you, Carla, in just a minute. But think about it just for a minute, right? If you're not preparing your child to live in this world, to compete in this reality, right? And I'm not talking about striving, right, in a negative way, but having those qualities and those attributes that they need to survive, number one, right? Teaching them to have a survival instinct, but also teaching them that confidence that they need in themselves where they're secure in who they are, right? Beautiful, brown as you are, our girls need to know that they are queens, not just a queen in terms of terms or words, but that you are a queen on the inside, right? And that you can walk this earth confidently, that our young princesses and our young princesses can know that they matter, right? Giving them the competence that they need. And I think, you know, the sister's right when she said we need to prepare our children and giving them a solid foundation, right? And so this is part of that education piece with the NAAEA is educating our young people, right? And even our community to be the best that they can be. I'm going down to 4756. 4756, if you're ready to talk, I'm ready to listen. Welcome
hey,
to the show.
Brother Warren.
Happy New Year.
Hey, I thought I definitely wanted to catch this show. I wanted to just share with you five things I think that a parent should teach their children, African American children.
All right.
The parents should teach their children their own immediate family history. Before we talk about ancient Africa, anything, Black kids need to know their mom's family, their dad's family, their grandparents' names. Because I do this in the community with young people as I show them how to set up a little family tree and how to go back and talk to people. Because what it does, it gives those children an actual place where they are. Because as they go back in their family line, whatever historical events that existed at that time, they can say their family lived or whatever. For example, Vietnam. So you can have kids say, well, my grandfather served in Vietnam, or my great-grandfather served in World War II, et cetera. So when they're in class and they're in school and they learn about these things that may seem abstract, they can find their family in that time period, even during enslavement. So we must stop avoiding joining family history because we feel it's hard or we don't want to talk to grandma or something like that. Because our kids are going to school with other cultures where these kids know their genealogy going back 7 to 8 generations. So it's unfortunate our kids got to be sitting in classrooms and then when it comes to what high school your grandmother went to, I don't know. What's your grandmother mean? I don't know. All right, that's the first thing. A strong sense of family history. I was given that as a kid by both my mom and dad and both sets of my grandparents going further back. The second thing is the love of reading in books. Kids just put down that cell phone, put down that smart device.
I like
pick
that
up
word.
A book, touch the book, open the book, read the book, get a bookmark, get a highlighter. Teach them the love of reading. Read with your kids. Go over some facts about a story, fiction or nonfiction, with your kids, and teach them that whenever they get into a tight spot with people who want to argue with them, they can always recall the knowledge that they've acquired through reading. There'll never be an empty vessel. The third thing our children should be encouraged to do is have conversations with senior citizens. Teach young Black kids to love old people, respect old people, and try to talk to them. Talk to the oldest person they could find in the family. Ask them what it was like to be a girl or a young man. What did you do when you dated somebody? How did you go out on dates? And
what kind of dance and what kind of music they had. Teach the children the value of talking to a senior citizen. The next thing is teach the kids to love their natural self. Love their God-given hair. Love their God-given skin. Love their God-given eyes. Love their God-given nose. Love their God-given bodies. And the last thing black children should be taught is a love and appreciation for nature. If you have any fishers or hunters in your family, like we did this weekend, do that. My little niece killed her first deer. She's in college.
All right.
She's a freshman in college. She killed her first deer on yesterday. She's so excited. Teach them about gardening, even if you don't garden. Show them flowers. Show them how okra grows up. What an okra pie look like. How easy you can grow okra and then take the pods off and cut them up and smother them and stew them with shrimp and smoked sausage like we do here in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the things I think that will promote the humanity of black children. They're naturally going to put themselves first. They're naturally going to love black people because we gave them, through these recommendations, ways to relate to black people in a humane way, seeking information and sharing information with them in turn. And those are the things I think that parents should teach their children.
I like that, Warren. Can you go down that list once again?
Once again.
Okay, real good. The first thing is a family history. Parents should develop family history trees with their kids, both the mom and dad. I know sometimes we have single-parent homes, so the mother should do what she can do, knowing about her mother and father for the kids going backwards. Love of reading and books. Kids should be taken to the library. They should be taken to bookstores. They should purchase books. They should have a little library in their room, aside from the smart device, the cell phone. Put them things down. Talk to old people at the church, old people in the neighborhood, old people in the family. Encourage them to find the oldest person they can, or even volunteer to take them to a senior citizen home once a month and find an older black person to talk to. Let the young girl comb and brush the hair of the black lady that's almost 100 years old, if it's not in their family. Love of natural self. Tell your kids how beautiful they are, how pretty they are, what nice hair they have, what, you know, how their skin glows in the sun. Edify their humanity. Build up their self-esteem and teach the kids a respect for nature. If you don't fish, you don't hunt, take them out walking in the park, woods. Show them how plants grow. Put an okra pod in the ground, which is easy. Okra is easy to grow. Put a red bean seed in the ground and watch that pretty plant sprout with the little pods come out and show the kid, because you may spark a love for science into the kid and so on and so forth. And those are the things that I recommend.
All right, Brother Warren,
thank you.
That is powerful.
It's powerful.
Watch this.
Watch
who's
this.
Teaching that?
Who's teaching that?
Who are teaching those things regularly and consistently? And can you say 9 out of every 10 black or African American or black and brown child are getting these 5 things or the things that the caller mentioned earlier about the foundation that we need? The question is, are we doing it? And if we're not, why not? All right, I'm going to Brother George. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
What you got?
What I wanted to say was the theme is unity, and I wanted to kind of give outlook on what unity is, because sometimes people confuse uniform with unity. The fact that we all look similar because we're African Moors, that's uniformity. We look similar, and so you could tell that we're of the same racial makeup. But unity is like the body. You know, you have a heart, you have lungs, you have a colon, you have hands, but all of those things work as a human being in unity. And so that's the same thing, you know, I heard Sister Yolanda say about us accomplishing everything because all of us do different things. And she's exactly right. And I just wanted to, you know, give another angle to that statement that she made, that we have to begin to learn that all of us are not the same and all of us are not going to do the same types of things. And so what that leads to is that when I look at my brother or my sister, I really hate it when our children are put into training programs and the only thing that the training program has is like trades. All of us are not tradesmen. So you just because you offer all of our young men or young women to become an electrician or a plumber or I'm not saying there's anything wrong with those trades. I'm saying that our people are just as versatile as any other people on this planet and that we should be involving ourselves and we should be leading our children down a path where they want to do more than just be a tradesman because that might not fit you. You might be a doctor. You might be a surgeon. You might be an oceanographer. You might be a biologist, you know, but the theme today is unity, and maybe further down the line I might be able to add something else to it. But those are my thoughts, brother.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. So I think identifying our children's aptitude and interests makes a difference, right? And so we can't pigeonhole or funnel our kids into, you know, certain career paths just because we want them to go in. And a lot of, and I know in many of our public school systems, our kids are forced into cosmetology and being barbers and, you know, but I think I will say plumbing and those skills are really electrician and things like that are really useful career paths. So don't get me wrong. And I know a lot of our kids go to college and don't have a clue about what they want to do once they declare a major. But let's identify what the aptitude and the interests of our children are early. I'll give you an example. Tiger Woods' dad got him that golf club when he was little. And that's all he knew how to do. And he trained his child, just like Mr. Williams over there with the Williams sisters who are professional tennis players at the top level. So applying your skills. Now, I'm not saying torture your kids and force them to do stuff, right? I allow my children to develop the way they wanted to be whoever they wanted to be. And I'm saying there has to be a healthy balance in parenting. But at the same time, we have to give out children the tools and the techniques and the strategies that they need to, one, survive, but two, to be successful in this world and be confident in who they are. I'm sliding down to 0946. 0946 is the Empowerment Network, and it's your main man, Marvin Rohn. Are you ready?
Hey, good afternoon.
Hey,
yes,
good afternoon.
I'm enjoying the conversation. Leave a legacy for our children. I think that if every family, I didn't have access to this, hindsight is 2020, but what is your mission and vision statement for your family? One of the things that proteges understand when they're in tutelage under a person that's this expert is that if your protege isn't better than you, then you didn't do your job. So I think part of what Brother Warren was saying about the history is that empowering our children to say, hey, look, your responsibility, this is how far mom and dad's been able to take it. Your responsibility is to take it to the next level. And I think that if we would begin to do that in increments in our families, then we would see kind of a organic evolution begin to happen because I can't take you where I have not been. I can't give you what I don't have. But what I can do is say, this is what I have. This is the max what I have of capital, human capital at this time. And this is how far I've been able to take it. Now, I want you to take what I know, the expertise that I have, the knowledge that I have, the information that I have, and you take it to the next level. And I think that that's the way that our families can an opportunity for our families to improve. And whatever our children's aptitude is, whatever, you know, identifying that, but also encouraging them. You know, Mom got into a lot of debt. You know, my college education cost me a lot of debt. Me being in debt cost me this, cost me that, cost me that.
Mm-hmm.
What I want you to do is be in a position to where you get a college education and you don't have to assume debt, because here are some advantages of being educated without debt. So I think that that was the power of the civil rights movement, is that people understood, I may not walk down this path that I'm getting ready to create. I am creating opportunity for those that are coming behind me. And I think that we have lost sight of that. I think everybody's trying to do everything in this moment and saying, okay, well, I'm going to have it all. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. When you bring children into the situation, the dynamics change. If you don't have children, then there's certain sacrifices you can make with your time and your energy. But when you have children, those children need your time. They need your energy. They need your interest. They need you to be there. And so there may be some things that you, even if you choose to do it with having children, that inadvertently you end up sacrificing your family because they're not getting the adequate time and the nurturing and attention that they need to get. So I think if we can just be honest about where we are in our present situation and say, you know what, I'm where I am because I've utilized all that I know how to use. That's not a bad thing. This was the information I was given. This is what I've learned. And what I want you to do is to take it to the next level. So that's all I have to say.
I like that. I like that.
I like that,
sister.
I like that.
All right. So let's think about this for a minute. Our children, not only do they need skills in terms of applying that to the workforce, but they need something else. They need those internal attributes. They need to learn how to be responsible citizens. They need to be accountable. They need to learn to be accountable for their actions and their behavior. They need to learn to be committed to, you know, like I was talking to someone the other day and they said, well, if we start something, we finish it. And so we talked about commitment to a project or to a cause, and then accountability. Our children need to understand how important it is to be accountable for their actions, for their words. And then lastly, and I'll wrap it back around again, our kids need confidence in themselves. And if we're not putting those tools inside of them, and not just parents, because we talked last week about the village, but it's not just parents that give children guidance. It's the village. We need strong leadership inside of the village, inside of the community that provides strong mentorship for our kids. So the village concept, again, is so important to our children. I'm going back over to 7974. What do you think? What are the characteristics or the qualities that our kids need in terms of accountability and responsibility to be successful?
Well, I think one of the things they need to know is that it's okay to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that when you, when children make mistakes, how you react to those mistakes are going to determine whether they tell you about future mistakes or whether they tell people who are probably going to guide them in the wrong direction. If you're going to be accountable, there's levels of accountability, right? It's easier, and what we should probably be teaching our children is it's easier to correct mistakes when they happen the first time, right? So it's a mistake if it happens the first time. Now, when you continue to do it willingly, it's no longer a mistake, it's a choice. And so once you do that, you have to deal with those consequences. But from an accountability standpoint, if our children are scared to tell us about the mistakes that they're making, we have to create a culture and a space for them to be able to talk to us about the mistakes that they've made. We also
have to
be careful when we talk to children about mistakes, because a lot of time the world is going to tell them that it's their fault, that they did something wrong for being who they are. So even in the classroom, the responsibility is going to be shifted on them, because it often is for our young black children, is that they're seen as responsible a lot earlier than their white counterparts. So they're seen to take responsibilities for their actions while white children at the same age are seen to be more innocent and still needing a protection. And we know that our black children are not protected outside of the household in particular, sometimes not in the household, but outside of the household in particular, at the same way that their white counterparts are and other children. So we have to sort of be careful how we teach children about mistakes, but I think cultivating a culture of communication is probably the best thing that we can do in the house as parents, because again, like I tell my daughter, if you come and tell me, the consequences are going to be a lot less than if you just do something and you know you did something wrong, right? Then the consequences are going to be greater. So talk to me, tell me, so that we can, one, talk about what happened, but why did you make that choice? And I think that's really critically important. Instead of just skipping to a punishment, tell me why you made that choice to do that or omit that or whatever the case may be. So, again, I think talking to our children, and again, not saying that there's not consequences, but I think that level of accountability and understanding is important, especially when you're trying to advocate for your child in the school system. And you're thinking about, okay, why did my child make that choice here? Is that same thing happening in school? Is there a misunderstanding? Whatever the case may be. But I do know that our children are constantly going to show up in spaces that are not designed for them and have people tell them, hey, you're responsible for this, even at a young age of 4, 5, 6, 7, whatever the case may be, because our children are adultified so early that we have to understand and allow our children to still be children but be able to see and talk to us about some of the things that they may be facing that they may not even know, but we have to coach them through and advocate really strongly for them. And I'm specifically talking about an education.
I like that.
Obviously, this applies to all areas, you know, of the world.
I like that. I like that. Let's give our kids the tools that they need. Right. And so we talk about correction for direction. Right. And not being punitive. And I mentioned it before on another show where sometimes our kids are not allowed to explore. They're not allowed to be themselves. And then there's discipline. Right. And I think when disciplining our kids, and I'm just going to be frank on this one, you don't have to beat your kids about everything that they do. Now, some of them going to be hard headed. Right. But I'm talking about correction for direction. Right. Teaching and training and developing kids where they'll be confident in themselves and not scared. Many of our adults are afraid, right? And so you just got to look at yourself and say, hey, how am I going to be that example? How am I going to be a support? How am I going to teach this young person or even look at myself in terms of my own qualities and characteristics of discipline and self-discipline, and how do they apply to my life, and how am I transitioning and translating that into the youth around me, or how am I doing that within my family, right? And so communication is key, right? How you communicate with young people. How are we communicating with our kids? Do we talk to them, or do we yell at them, or do we scream at them? What's the language, right? And that political language, right, that George talked about in terms of having a collective consciousness, and that consciousness also has to do with communicating. Are we communicating for understanding? Are we communicating to convey only our needs? How do we give our kids balance? Brother Warren, I'm coming back to you. What do you think?
As it relates to giving our kids balance?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Well, I think that we have to spend more time with our young people. We can't let social media and raise them. And I think too many of African-American children, I can't put a percentage on it, the adults in their lives are not spending quality time with them. And so what happens is, and I think that's a problem all across the board, regardless of the demographic group. And I think that kids really appreciate when you're talking to them, you're bringing them places, and you're engaged in what's happening. You talk to them about what's going on at school. You're taking them to colleges. You're taking them to as the adult. It could be an aunt, an uncle. It could be a big cousin, et cetera. You know, they need quality time spent with them. And I think too many of them, many of our young people, too many are idle. And so therefore they are left to the devices and the influence on the phone and what's on television. And so they don't have that quality time spent with them. That's very important for the proper development and nurturing of young people, is quality time spent with them.
I like that, Warren. I really love that. You know, and Warren touched on it, is those influences, right? So social media, right, and all of those platforms that our children are exposed to, and particularly if you aren't a conscious parent that's really monitoring what your child is exposed to, even in the cartoons now, you have to be careful about what your child is exposed to and what you want them to see at their age and stage of development. Warren hit it, quality time. We have to put in order for to get the output that our kids will eventually evolve to be, because we have set the standard. We've set the pace. We've been there. And there's nothing like having quality experiences, but more importantly, exposure. And I believe that we have to expose our kids, like Warren said, to reading, right? And like Sister Yolanda said, to a foundation. And like what Sister Benita said, is being able to give our kids what they need, right? And so to me, from an African-American perspective, it is exposure. What are our kids being exposed to? Are they being exposed to a college campus, right? Are they getting exposed to a PWI and a HBCU, and they compare and contrast? Are they getting the knowledge that they need to make excellent choices in their lives? Do they know what the world is about? Do they know about Paris? Do they know about Africa? Do they know about London? We learned something yesterday, and I was amazed that the Big Ben clock, and I'm moving up in age, was named after Benjamin Banneker. Wow, didn't know that. I thought that was really good. All right, I'm going down to 0946. 0946, what you got?
I enjoy what everyone is saying, and it's all about, for me, investing in the child. And there's a balance that you have to have in your personal ambition and your responsibility as a parent. And I think what we see a lot of, and that's why so many children are so exposed and babysitted by social media, cell phone, is because parents are still in the midst of their ambition and what they want to accomplish. And there's nothing wrong with having ambition, but you've got to balance it so you don't end up sacrificing your child. One of the things is, how does your child get quality time, quality attention if you're working 13 hours a day? How does that happen? Even though you may be able to provide them with the gadgets, and this is one of the paradoxes that a lot of single parents find themselves in. It's like you're trying to choose between, do I have my child in a neighborhood that's safe? Do I have my child in an environment that's safe? Do I expose them to good education? But without that interaction from the parent, the child doesn't really have an opportunity to be able to process what's happening to them. And so I think that's why it's so important, when we think about having children, that we understand this thing that we're getting ready to embark on. It's not just bringing another little me into existence, but I am bringing an individual in this world, and by us being human beings, we need nurturing, we need caring, we need time. And that's really hard to balance for a lot of our children, especially African-American children that are being raised in single-parent homes. And so how you balance that, you know, I think going back to what you're saying, Marvin, is about creating that village around you, creating that support system around you, so that if you don't have the time because you are working all these crazy hours, that your child has somebody or someone or someone in the village that they can go to. They may not talk to you, but they may be willing to talk to someone else. And, you know, you have to be wise about that, but setting up that support system around them. And I don't know, you know, I don't know if we can really do this in the vein that we're trying to do it, because we're basically saying now that you can have it all, and can you really raise an adjusted, well-balanced child if you are not spending the quality time and you are and not interacting with them and putting that time into them? Can you really raise this balanced child? And I think that with a lot of African women, especially African American women with single parent homes, having to choose a career because they're trying to say, I want my child in a safe environment. I want my child to be exposed to good education. But, you know, the reality is, can you have it all being a single parent? And I think that when single parents get up, say, for instance, women that have gone on and advanced their careers or whatever, and they get up and they don't tell the whole story. Like, you know, I may have advanced in my career. I may have advanced this, but in the midst of that, this is what I ended up sacrificing. I ended up sacrificing the time that I was able to spend with my child. I wasn't able to do this with my child. I wasn't to be able to do that with my child. And I'll end with this, because you see this this dichotomy where you have well-educated parents and then their children are like lost. You know, it's like, what happened in that dynamic? You know, it's like, what happened to the child? So I think it's just really important that we understand the endeavor that we are taking on when we take on the responsibility of bringing another life into this world.
Wow. That's good, sister. That's good. That's a good question, right? Can we really raise a well-balanced child in this society? Wow, let's think about that for a minute. Can we do it, right? There are levels that we're going to have to achieve in order to find success. And I think, one, we talked about the influences that this society is offering our children, but on the other end, it's the investment that comes from parenting or a surrogate or whoever that is, a mentor. How do we teach our kids to excel by investing in them, right? Putting them in quality programs and nurturing our kids and developing a system of support and network, because you can't leave your kids with everybody. You can't leave them with some family members because they're just not ready for that level. Yes, let's be honest about that. We have some levels of dysfunction that we need to work out in our community that comes from slavery, that comes from the dysfunction that we've inherited. But how can we raise a child in this society? I'm going to slide on over to 1209. 1209, if you're ready to talk, I'm ready to listen. Marvin Roan and the Empowerment Network. How are you?
Hello?
1209, yes, sir. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm sorry, Marvin. I didn't even know I was on the show, man. I called in.
All right. Well, you want to talk to me? You can. We're talking
well,
about
you know, I'm
things
trying to call
we should
the...
teach our children.
Well, I think the whole key is, and this is funny, you catch me off guard, but the whole key is to come together as community. You know, me still living in Churchill, I often tell my friends about coming up in Churchill, how you didn't have to have a car to do anything. You didn't have to wait for your parents to come home to pick you up, to take you to practice, take you to school, take you to church. And I think that's a big part of the issue, that we live so separate now that the help that we used to have from family, friends, and community is no longer available. That's why it's difficult for parents who are professionals to try to achieve their goals and also support their children, because they have to run so much. I got to go so far to work, and then I got to go so far to the grocery store. I got to go so far to pick them up from school and take them to practice. Whereas, see, when we lived in our community here in Churchill, I didn't have to wait for my mother to get off of work to go to practice or to go to my church program. So
true.
I think that if we brought the community back together first, where we could monitor each other, because we could trust other adults to help you with your child. And we did trust other adults and trust teachers in school and, you know, the pastors and the deacons and all of those people. See, we got to come together. We're doing too much of an individual thing. Everybody's going in their own direction. So it makes it difficult for any one person to do everything that we need to do. So we need to find a way to come back and build a community,
mm-hmm.
build a community where we know all the police officers, you know, and they know us, you know, and we know the parents and the elders, and we're helping the elders out, and the elders helping us out with good information. So, you know, to me, that's what I think we need to do. We need to come together in community, and we've done it before, and we can do it again.
All right. Thank you, brother. I appreciate your call. All right. So we're living in a diverse time, right? So we're now fully integrated, where our families are spread across the city, or they're spread across the state, or even they're spread across the nation. And some of us are even around the world now. So that web or that network of community, the cohesiveness is kind of changed, and we have to be able to change with that time. So how do we do that? I'm going back to 7974. I'm going on a speed round. I got 4 minutes. How do we combat having those changes and adjustments in our community in this modern era? What you got, Carla?
I mean, again, I think it goes back to the foundations, right? So how we monitor what our children are doing, how we spend time with them. We talk to our children so that our children trust us, so that they're not looking for all of their information on social media or from their friends. I think technology can be great. And I think that it's a matter of how you use it and how you shape it for your children. And
true.
So just like most things, moderation, right? You can't just to access and let your children watch any and everything. But with the internet, it has allowed us to be able to use technology to do wonderful things. My daughter has a coding game that she loves to play. And so I think that you have to use what you have. It can be a wonderful educational tool that helps balance things out. So I think that as we think about, you know, the community, and as we think about providing safe places for our children, I think how we combat it in this modern day world is really some of the same principles that we've had all along, right? You use the tools and the resources that you have, and you use them in moderation and specifically to help shape it. It doesn't take or replace the human factor. It's never going to replace that. And I think as you grow older, you see how much you relied on your parents as a child, and in the adult version, how much you rely on your parents, even now, if we are lucky and blessed to still have your parents and elders around. So I think it's just keeping them on track. I think it's just keeping
True.
Them on track and protecting them and preparing them as they grow older, protecting this for the younger, and then and preparing them as they grow older for the world.
All right. Thank you, Carla. Brother Warren, sliding down to you. What you got? How do we prepare our kids in this world?
Well, I think that the recommendations I gave when I first started, I think, is an important foundation. And our kids are competing with other people in the world. And the other kids in the world, their parents are intervening in their development to make sure that they are highly competitive. A lot of these ethnic groups, if these children bring home less than an A or even a B, that could be a death sentence, figuratively, not necessarily
mm-hmm.
literally, in the family, which means they don't accept any excuse for not trying to be perfect. And our kids don't understand that they're on a racetrack and other people
mm-hmm.
are looking at them as something to compete against. And I don't think we teach our kids that they're in a competition. People are looking at our kids as something to compete against and take something from them, even though they don't really understand that that's how they're being looked at. And that's a bad
mm-hmm.
situation to be in. That's a bad situation to be in when you don't know that you're on a racetrack and other people are running past you and you're just sitting there because nobody has prepared you or even explained to you that this is a competition.
Wow. That's so true. Thank you, Brother Warren. And thank you, callers. That brings us to the end of this show. Thank you very much. So what do we have here, right? We're talking about developing ourselves and the things we should be teaching our children. Go back and listen to this one. Apply it to your family. There are many great things that came out of this. And as we move into 2021, we're going to work on developing and establishing a positive foundation for community, family, and self. It is the Empowerment Network. Your man Marvin Roan and my co-host Stan Macklin. Join us next week as we can further the discussion as we continue to work on working on ourselves. Peace and blessings. Talk to you next week. Love you. I'm out.
Without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid my rest.
Peace and quietness you're sure to find,
and the world will be better for this. That one man scorned and covered with scars still strove